Welcome to the EINIS Network podcast series. EINIS stands for the European Network on International Student Mobility that aims to connect research and practice. Enjoy our podcast and get to know the latest news on international student mobility.
Hello, everybody. My name is Giorgio Marinoni. I'm the manager for internationalization of higher education at the International Association of Universities. And it's a great pleasure to be here with you today for this EINIS podcast. And have with me a very remarkable colleague, Queenie Lam, researcher from the Institute of Sinology in Trier. Welcome, Queenie.
Thank you, Giorgio, for the introduction. I'm very happy to engage in this conversation with you, a very remarkable practitioner in the field.
Thank you very much, Queenie. The topic that today Queenie and I will discuss is the availability, comparability, and quality of data in international student mobility. And the first question that I have for you, Queenie, is can you tell us about a little bit the availability of data in international student mobility?
Yes, sure. In my previous experience working as policy researcher before joining the academia, I've often encountered some kind of unrealistic expectations that secondary data of international student mobility is readily available. And so sometimes we got like 20 days to map mobility between Europe and China, which is a bit difficult to do because if you know how data sets are differently defined in different international surveys, actually even with secondary data, we don't have a lot of available data, especially when it comes to comparability of the data and the quality in terms of granularity of the data that can be readily used for customized research to answer the questions that policy makers would like to answer. So now I throw the question back to you, Giorgio. So you're working in one of the biggest organizations that's collecting a lot of international education data set as well, So I would like to ask, how does IAU balance the comparability of data and the quality, or like specifically granularity of data, when you conduct these massive surveys or on a global level?
Yeah, thank you very much, Queenie. This is a very pertinent question because this is one of the major challenges that we have when we are conducting our survey. Because of course, when we are mainly conducting quantitative surveys, something to specify. And therefore, in order to have statistically representative data, we need quite important number of replies, which is not very easy. And in order to have a high number of replies, we cannot have very detailed and very granular surveys. So in the majority of our surveys, we are kind of sacrificing the granularity of the information in order to have a higher return rate, a higher response rate, and also in order to have more general data, which could be somehow used also by other researchers and other practitioners. But of course, this is a tension that it's continuously present. And sometimes when we are conducting our surveys, we have to limit ourselves at data at a global level because we don't have enough information to have statistically relevant data at regional level, not to speak about national level data. And this is, of course, is a limitation because it will also prevent us to compare data with data that are available at national level, because there is much more data available at national level in the world than data at global level. And that's why I think we are one of the few organizations that is collecting data at global level. And this could be interesting for also for other researchers.
Yes, and that's why I think this in EINIS project, we also collect an overview of national data and of student mobility. And it needs a lot of coordination among national governments or researchers who are working on different systems to discuss also like issues of definitions, whether we can harmonize definitions or maybe do some mapping of the definition that makes it possible to not combine data, but somehow join the data for at least some estimates of trends. Do you agree with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the basic definition of who is an international student, it's not standard all around the world. We know, for instance, a lot of different differences between countries to countries. There is the official definition by UNESCO of who is an international student. So is a student who is crossing a border to pursue his educational offer, but not all the countries are using exactly this definition. So there are some countries who are counting as international students, students who had a degree, had completed a previous degree in another country and then moved to another country for their tertiary education. But there are also other countries that they're counting international students based on nationality, based on the passport that they bring. And this can bring a lot of fluctuations in the data. For instance, one of the points here that we probably have to think about is also how we treat refugees. Are refugees international students? Because refugees have not moved for an educational purpose. They moved to another country because they were forced to move. So how do we count them? So we see there are a lot of differences in definitions. And definitely, when we are speaking about comparability of data at global level, this is a challenge.
Yes, indeed. Actually, we discussed this question in one of the webinars of the INIS project. How do we come up with a more refined definition of international students? And this is not just, this would be very important. It would be very important to have different subcategories of international students, if possible, because I do see like different indicators have their values when it comes to answering different research questions. So nationality is not totally irrelevant, but it should be clearly defined and separated from, say, the place of residence or place of birth of a student or the institution that they studied prior to the mobility, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think this it's a challenge that our ENIS action is trying to overcome. But speaking about another challenge that I would like to discuss today with you is the collaboration between researchers and practitioners, because we have seen that I just spoke about me, myself, I'm mainly a practitioner. Sometimes practitioners are also conducting some research and they're collecting their own data, but there is a lot of research out there, and a lot of researchers sometimes are approaching practitioners in order to conduct their research and to access data. But this collaboration is not always very easy. What are, in your opinion, the main challenges for this collaboration, and what are the best ways in order to have a good collaboration, in order to exchange data, in order for researchers to collaborate with practitioners in collecting data?
Yeah, I think in terms of accessibility, we need to differentiate open access and closed access data. And nowadays, I think for a lot of academic research, we are already advocating towards open access or making even data sets available by putting them in repositories for other researchers to use. And certainly, I think practitioners can also access those data if they would like to use those data. And usually I think for academic research, we have a longer time frame to collect firsthand data or firsthand data. So I think there's a pool of resources that practitioners should consider using. And for other open access data, actually, I think for public institutions, especially on the EU level, we have pretty good data sets. And I think if the research addresses important issues or relevant issues, it's possible to request data from the commission, and I've done that very often for my policy research, not so much yet for my academic research, but I think the commission is in general supportive of making data open access. The problems I found would be that the privatization of data, like commercial data, sometimes we also have a lot of private organizations working on international student mobility in the field. And you get some rather superficial, like highly aggregated data for free. But then if you want to access more granular data, you have to pay. So you have to break the paywall to get access to data. So I wonder, like, how we could convince the commercial companies to support academic research or policy research in the sense of sharing data with us.
Yeah, that's indeed not an easy task, because unfortunately many commercial companies are constructing their business exactly on that model, in the sense, like as you said, having a free set of data available in order to attract the interest of researchers and policymakers, and then selling them the more granular data, the highest quality data also, and that's their business model. So it's going to be not easy to convince these business companies to change their business model and to make data available. But what I see, and I wonder if you agree with me, I see in the latest year there is much more push from political organizations, and you spoke about the European Commission. The European Commission is one of them, towards more open access of data and availability of data. Do you think that this, in the long run, will really work and allow data to be more available and allow also for a bigger cooperation between researcher practitioners?
I do think this is working. It's changing the culture of how we handle data and how we make data transparent and accessible to researchers. Sometimes it costs money, like public funding, to make data accessible. But I think this is a cultural change. Once we're used to have this kind of open access mentality, maybe commercial organizations will also at least maybe lower the price level of the data that they are selling. Sometimes it's just too expensive to buy access to those rather valuable data sets. And also by making data transparent, I think it contributes to this kind of harmonization of definitions that could actually be very beneficial for those of us who are doing global research of student mobility. And another thing I could think of is to coordinate among national governments. That's been a dream of me for many years, to get national governments to discuss a few indicators, definitions of indicators, to see how we could somehow harmonize those definitions before the collection of data. And I'm not talking about, well, this is less of an issue for EU countries, but third countries, like countries where international students are coming from, like Vietnam, China, India. On one hand, it's difficult to access their national data sets because of language barriers. And on the other hand, is the different definitions of students, or different definitions that they use for collecting data sets that you mentioned already earlier, about like how different national governments report student data to the UIS database.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I would add another point here on the fact of the collection itself of data and the availability of this data, because the difference between countries in the world, it's not only that the data is differently accessible, But sometimes it's also a matter if the data exists and what is the quality of that data. And we see, for instance, that we're going to be speaking about the numbers of international student mobility. We have only one global data set, which is the data set of the UNESCO Institute for Statistics. But this data set has a lot of problems. And I know that you are have a very critical view on that. And I will ask you something in a minute. But the problem is that I think it's something of high concern, especially for a global association like International Association of Universities, that you have a different amount of data in different countries, with mainly the Western and developed countries having a lot of data, whereas you have developing countries having less amount of data and also less quality. But what is your take on having this kind of a modernization, and what can we do when we have this problem of lacking data, for instance?
Yes, I've done quite a few global comparative analysis of international data and realized that there are some black boxes globally. I think it's a global issue. Maybe global organizations like IAU could advocate and for change by asking national governments to maybe share practices, how they collect data, and convince them why it's useful to collect certain sets of data for their own good, for example, for tracking their own development. So this is a job for you. But what I've seen on UIS data set, yes, the critical part is coming. So, for example, when I was extracting data about mobility of students from China or Chinese students in general, covering the different systems of special administrative regions and the Republic of China, I realized that some very advanced countries like Singapore has not submitted data to the UIS database. And if you study mobility of Chinese students, this is a big hole to fill. I don't know the background about this. We need to involve the UIS data collectors to explain why countries like Singapore, which has been receiving quite a number of Chinese students, didn't submit data to the data set. But for example, these countries, we could ask them, and I'm sure they have some data that could be reported to. The other hole I've seen would be like countries, the disputed territories, which did not submit data to the UIS data set. And for example, Taiwan is not there. And I realized that when I was doing another piece of research, I realized that there are more disputed territories on the earth than I imagined. And for example, later on, like how do we deal with these like gray zone areas in international data sets?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest points that we should tackle at global level, because it's important that we really have a global vision of international student mobility. And we cannot live in a world when we have better information from one part of the world and less or even no information from another part of the world. So a lot of work ahead of us. And I see that our time is almost running out. So before concluding this very nice discussion, I would like just one takeaway for the people that are following us on all this discussion about data. What would be, if you want to give a piece of advice to researcher and practitioner in international student mobility on this issue of access, quality, and comparability of data?
May I use this time for advertising?
Yeah, why not?
So in the ENIS project, we have the working group one that's dealing with macro trends of international student mobility. And one of our deliverables is is a database of databases. So we hope that at the end of this project, we will have a nice overview of all the international data sets and national data sets concerning international student mobility numbers to be shared not just within the INIS project, but with researchers and practitioners who are working on this topic. And we are now collecting data or downloading the data sets from all these databases because it would be huge, but it serves more like a pointer to the different sources that you that other colleagues have already used or other colleagues are aware of, so that you can at least save some time from poking around the website or internet to find a path to those data sets. And I think this is a very good first step to work together on this issue. And the other one would be, I think, like organizations like IAU or the commission or UIS could sit together to talk about some of the issues that we are discovering on the way of our project.
Thank you very much, Queenie, for this very nice conclusion. And there is not much I can add on that, apart that ENIS was born as a project to fill in gaps between research and practitioners. And with this initiative of the database, we are also trying to fill in gaps in data availability, comparability, and quality. So let me thank you very much, Queenie, for your nice chat today. And I want to thank you also, all our participants, our listener to this podcast. And I invite you to follow the next podcast of the ENIS project. Thank you very much for your attention and have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you. Have a nice day.
This podcast was powered by the European Union-founded Coast Association.